in our internal dialogue, that voice in our head that talks to us every day, we can control that. If you're the chief eating officer or compassionate chief feeding officer, the word compassionate comes in there. We can control what we say to ourselves. And sometimes we talk very badly to ourselves, and it really doesn't help anything. It surely doesn't help weight loss. And also being kind to everyone else is extremely important. So you'll feel good about yourself and make friends and be happy and doing the whole social interaction thing. So it's just not being kind to yourself. We're probably kinder to everyone else than we are to ourselves a lot of times. But I think that being kind is very important and something to keep your thoughts on.
Hi, I'm Dr. Morgan Nolte, founder of Zivly. As a geriatric physical therapist, I saw the heartbreaking effects of insulin resistance. At Zivly, our mission is to help you prevent and reverse insulin resistance for long-term weight loss and disease prevention through a low insulin and inflammation lifestyle. Each week on this podcast, you'll learn simple, actionable tips to lose weight, keep it off, and get healthy. If you're ready to create a body and life you love, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Reshape Your Health podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Morgan Nolte, and I'm really excited to share today's guest with you. I can tell already he's a really special human being. He reached out to me via email and he just said, I have a story to share. I have lost a lot of weight. I've been able to keep it off and I want to share how I did it with your audience. And of course, I thought, well, I need to know a little bit more about you, right? And he sent back the most thoughtful email about his system and his process and just the inspiration by which he lives his life to serve other people and help them get healthy is really neat. And so I wanted to have him on the show. I know you're going to get a ton of value from today's episode. His name is Martin Scher, and he is a retired CEO of an 83-year-old family business. And he's used his skills and experience as a CEO to lose 50 pounds on his own weight loss system. He now calls himself the Compassionate CEO, which stands for Chief Eating Officer. And his mission is to get people out of diet hell. His vision is to help people customize their permanent weight loss plans and, like me, has a shared vision and passion for reversing diabetes. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nolte. I love being here. It's really a pleasure and an honor for me to be with you today.
Thank you. Call me Morgan, first of all.
Oh, okay, Morgan. Okay.
Call me Morgan. It's so great to be here. You know, we were talking offline on what we really wanted to share with the audience. And I think that your personal story is such a great place to start. So can you please give our audience a bit of background as on you and when you had that pivotal realization that, oh my gosh, I have all of the skills in me to lose weight and keep it off. I just need to translate them from the business realm to my health.
Absolutely. First of all, it's great to be here. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks.
And I'm a CEO, but I'm just a normal person. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a nutritionist, a clinician, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I'm just a CEO. And I grew up in a family business that's 83 years old, as you said. And that's all I know is to be a CEO. And I was 22 years old when I started. My dad died at 54. So some kind of way I had to come straight out of college and manage a business with about 30 or 40 people at the time. And they all raised me. They were my mother's, my sisters or whatever. So it was kind of nice because they loved me, but it was kind of difficult. Because I had to make changes. When people get old like me, you know, change has to happen. So that was kind of challenging. But I love being a CEO, but I like better being retired. I've been retired for about 16 years now. And I'm not going to make my story too long because I'm 72 years old. I don't think we'd have time for anything else. So I tried to departmentalize it a little bit and tell you a little bit about my family and just a few things that are important to me. But I've been married for 50 years to my wife, Debbie. I've also been a CEO for 50 years. We got married young and she was with me when I just started being a CEO in my business. The family business is 85 years old. My father has an interesting story. He kind of lived the American dream. He was very poor and he had a paper route, and he had to work to have money come in for the family during the Depression. Mm-hmm. And he did the paper route, and then he started selling people clothing, and then he had a store and got them to come to him. And long story short, that's where our business came from. And 83 years later, we're still in business. So we're proud of that. I had to work really hard. When we got to the dinner table at night, he would talk business. So I got to learn a lot of business and life from him. His big saying to me all his life is, "Martin, you can do anything you make up your mind to do." And I've thought about that my entire life, and I've lived by that. And also, anybody that's a listener here, if you've been a yo-yo dadder like me all your life, then you can do anything you make up your mind to do. So my goal today with this is to have one person. I talk in terms of one person rather than thousands of people. But if one person would just make an irrevocable commitment to permanent weight loss today, I'd be very happy. And if they worked with you on Civly, I'd be even happier, because after, I don't know a ton about it yet, but I can tell we're on the same wavelength. So wherever anybody can get help, that's where they should go. My dad died at 54. My mother, of course, I got to live with her for a long time. She lived to 75, but she had diabetes when she was about 65. And it was kind of horrible to me. And I know your dad probably has diabetes, if I've mm-hmm. heard it right on a podcast. And it was really, she had to have her fingers amputated. She had heart disease. She had this, that, and the other. And it was just awful. And so that had a big effect on me. And when I decided to lose the 50 pounds that I lost, I had two commitments that I made to myself when I made my irrevocable commitment. I was going to get a new car, a new luxury car, and I wasn't going to trade the car that I had until I lost the 50 pounds. The problem was that it took me about 10 years to lose the 50 pounds. So I had to drive that car. It almost fell apart, but eventually I got there. So that was one thing. The other thing was that I spend the rest of my life trying to help people lose weight and get healthy. It's not a business to me. I'm not doing it for any kind of business reasons. Right. I'm through with that. But I get tremendous joy, you know, from helping people get healthy. And, you know, I do work with, since I'm older, a lot of older people come to me and I try to help them. And it just makes me think, I wish people would start in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, because this disease of this diabetes is cumulative from what the best I can tell and what I've learned about it. It just doesn't mm-hmm. show up one day. It just keeps coming and coming, and people don't even realize they have it. So if we could make the 88% of the America that's metabolically unhealthy, if we could make them healthy and get started earlier, we could really change the world. But so anyway, those are the highlights. I retired. I've been doing this for 16 years. I love it. I have a passion for it. I intend on doing it the rest of my life. And I do have a special passion for fasting, intermittent fasting. I started doing that about 3 years ago, and I do a 22-2 protocol. So I'm really into it. And I never thought I could even get to lunch without eating. But it's an amazing part, and I think it's part of your plan to help people, you know, have some sort of intermittent fasting protocol that they do, or part of your plan. I don't know that much, but I assume that would be part of your plan.
Yeah, it's very individualized. So on our plan, we like people to just start at 12 to 14 hours, mm-hmm. just to kind of cut that late night snacking habit. And then from there, modify it based on their weight loss or their muscle gain goals, or a lot of it too is psychological. If people mm-hmm. have a history of an eating disorder, then that might not be the best strategy. So it's really personalized. But I think anyone listening, if you're not already fasting for 12 to 14 hours a day, start there.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Do it gently. And I'm writing a book. I don't know if I mentioned to you.
No, you didn't mention that.
Yeah, I'm about 95% through. Then I just have to kind of clean it up and it'll be out in 2024 if I'm around to do that. So I'm real excited about it. And what I did in the book, I'm trying to get people ready for intermittent fasting, because when I started this, I didn't know about intermittent fasting. I started this 16 years ago. So all I had, that I could do was to eat less and exercise more. And you know how hard that is. We really got some bad advice over the years, but that's what I had to live with. So my plan is to cover everything there is that you need to do, from your mindset to your how you eat, intermittent fasting, your background, to examine your past, and it just covers every area. And I'm feeling like if I do that with people, then they will be able to easily get into intermittent fasting in a gentle way. But it should be part of, and we just don't need to eat as often as we do. And, so what I had to do on my plan, just to kind of wander into that, to eat less and exercise more, you have to, I had to do it the way not to be hungry was to eat as much as I possibly could and still lose weight. That's why it took me 10 years, because when I made my irrevocable commitment, I didn't care how long it took me to lose, but I was just going to do that. And the only way I could do it was not to be hungry all the time. So I'm a numbers freak. I guess I learned that in my business, and my father kind of was too. So I measured everything. I weighed every day. I know a lot of people don't, weigh every day, but that information's important. I just use it as a data point, my 7-day running average. Yeah. And also did my Fitness Pal and kept up with, the food I ate. And it's just so important if you don't have intermittent fasting to know exactly what your body does, what it needs, and to do it some sort of consistent way. And it gives you the information you need. This is just my personal opinion. I realize I'm in the minority. Yeah. I'm in the minority. I realize that. So I guess I'm talking to myself. But
helpful, because there are trends. I told you I'll kind of bookmark things throughout this interview, but there are trends that you're telling me that helped you lose weight and keep it off that are in the literature on what actually works. And so I'm going to bring those up kind of throughout the interview, but keep going on your story.
Okay. So, I built a plan that I designed myself. I do something called the CEO meeting every morning. I think it's it's very similar to what you have people do. And what I did is, when I was a CEO, the one thing I did, I thought I better sit in my office for an hour every day. I'm kind of a planner and try to figure out what's the most important thing for me to do today, what the figures look like yesterday, how my systems are doing, and, evaluate some of the culture things that I used to like to work on. I love to work on culture and people. That was the highlight of the business for me, because I like to coach. I have three children, Emily, Robert, and Amanda, and I also have my first grandchild, and they decided he should call me coach. So I'm not going to be grandpa. I'm going to be coach, but he's just one year old. He's 1 year old and he can't quite say it yet. So, but anyway, I had this meeting, the CEO meeting, and I spent an hour on it. It was a recurring meeting on my calendar. Of course, it was on my written calendar. Back then, we didn't have, the kind that we have now. But I'm real glad I did that, because I didn't want the business to run me. I wanted to be in charge of the business, and I can't do everything. And when you're a CEO like you are in your business, you have to take care of what you need to care of, and other people can't do that. And you have to figure out what the plan is and what the future looks like and do those kind of things. So I spent a lot of time at that. I really wouldn't take any interruptions unless the building was burning down or something like that. And it was important. And I just, when I retired, that was the only thing I knew to do to run my life after I retired. And I could never lose weight when I was working. And it really frustrated me, because I could run a business, but I couldn't run my own body. So when I finally retired, I just did my CEO meetings that became chief eating officer meetings. And I said, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to cover every area of my life, my body, my soul, whatever it needs to do. And I identified all my problems. I have 17 problems I identified in my life. And I had them all by the time I was 10 years old. And so I just did the whole gamut of things. I guess I tried to make it short, but I guess that'll get you started.
Oh, that's great. I just want to put a bookmark in here and talk about some of the things that are in the literature mm-hmm. that support long-term weight loss that you did, whether mm-hmm. or not you knew that you were doing them, that they would work, mm-hmm. they did. Mm-hmm. You know, the first is you released the time-bound goal. You said, I'm going to lose 50 pounds and I don't care how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people put too much pressure on themselves to lose half a pound a week or a pound a week. And then when they're not seeing that progress, they get discouraged, they get confused, they get overwhelmed, and then they have the screw it eating, which sabotages their weight loss goals. So number one was you release the time-bound nature of your weight loss goal. Mm-hmm. Number two was you're pretty weight neutral. You said, I weighed myself every day, but I just viewed it as data. And I think mm-hmm. if we could all adopt that kind of scale neutrality, that does a lot for preventing those emotional roller coasters that come when your weight goes up and down. And as women, I know you kind of say a 3-pound range, but especially if you still have a menstrual cycle, I think a little bit wider of a range, like for me personally, is great. Like maybe like a 3-pound range the week before my period and then like mid-cycle, I think is good, mm-hmm. but being pretty scale neutral. Another thing is you tracked your food. You tracked your food on MyFitnessPal. I don't know what nutritional approach you did. And there's a lot of different ones that can work. But tracking your food consistently has been proven in the literature to help with long-term weight loss or body recomposition goals. And mm-hmm. a lot of people have a lot of excuses around why they don't want to track their food. And it usually goes back to either the all or nothing mindset or they're perfectionist or they are plain and simple. Like they use the excuse, I'm not tech savvy or I don't want to spend my time on it. And all of those little excuses are your brain trying to be lazy and hold you back from reaching your goals. Mm-hmm. If you're serious about losing weight, it is helpful to track your food, even if it's just for a shorter period of time, so mm-hmm. you understand what you're eating. The next thing was I put, you went there emotionally. And we were talking offline about what we really wanted people to get out of this interview. And from a male's point of view, we have a lot of women listeners, but their husbands maybe have some room for improvement for their health. And I told you, I think one reason that men sometimes struggle to get initiated on this weight loss journey is because they're afraid to get vulnerable and authentic with themselves and their partner about their weaknesses. And you weren't, you know, you viewed your health weaknesses as a business weakness. You confronted it. You said, I had 17 problems and I took the time to think about them. And there's a quote somewhere that said, I don't remember who said it, but it's like, most people would rather die than think. And then they do. I don't know who said that, but thinking is really important, you know? And then the last thing is you did your daily, we call it a daily mindset routine. You know, you had your CEO morning meeting or however you phrase that. And those regular check-ins with yourself for self-accountability are really important because it allows you to adjust and fine-tune your plan as you go along, instead of like a business owner waiting until the end of the quarter to check your, you know, earnings or expenses and say, oh no, we have a problem here. We're not making any progress. Mm-hmm. So the other thing too, is it gives you the opportunity to praise yourself and recognize your wins and show up for yourself so that you build that integrity muscle that is needed to consistently take the actions required to become a healthy person. So those were all of the things that I noticed in your story that I wanted to highlight for the listener on, hey, if you're serious about losing weight and keeping it off, these are some habits that are really going to serve you well. So I wanted to pivot into your 10 thin commandments. I think that is a very catchy thing and they're really good. And as part of this, I wanted you to just share your irrevocable commitment to permanent weight loss, because when you reached out to me, you linked me to a video on your Facebook group page, which is free. If anyone wants to join his Facebook group page, we'll link it in the show notes. And I was so impressed. So for members, we call this our personal faith formula. And he rattled us off like a boss, like a CEO. And so I want that to be part of this discussion on the 10 Thin Commandments too, but I'll let you run with those.
Okay. Well, first of all, I made some notes while you were talking. I want to come back to that. But if it's okay with you and you have time for it, I'll just do my compassionate chief eating officer pledge, as I call it. Would that be okay?
Fantastic.
Okay. I am the unstoppable, compassionate chief eating officer of my mind and my body. I control food. Food does not control me. I eat to live now. I no longer live to eat. Food is simply fuel for my body, so I eat what I need the most, not what I want the most. The nutrition score rules, period, end of story, so I manage my nutrition score. My mindset is now how little can I eat, not how much. My mindset is how slow can I eat, not how fast. My mindset is how soon can I stop. I eat to satisfy hunger only. I no longer eat for comfort. I no longer eat for entitlement. I no longer eat for reward. I no longer eat for celebration. I no longer eat out of boredom. I no longer eat because I'm excited. I no longer eat just because I have a craving or want something. I avoid the uncomfortable feeling of fullness forever. I select more whole, healthy, nutritious foods. I sit and eat slowly and savor every bite. I stop at satiety 66. In fact, the hungrier I am, the slower I eat, and the slower I eat, the more I enjoy food. Every day is an opportunity to lose 0.2 pounds. I succeed in the moment, one moment at a time, and one day at a time, and I have an abundant, unlimited supply of willpower that never ends. I exercise for health, fitness, and enjoyment, no longer for weight loss, and I create my own new healthy, itsy-bitsy, tiny micro habits for me to use for the rest of my life, because I am the unstoppable, compassionate chief eating officer of my mind and body. And I 100% believe that I will weigh 179. I 100% commit that I will weigh 179. And I 100% will stay determined to weigh 179 and stay at that weight for the rest of my life.
So I feel like I need a mic drop right there, A mic drop moment. Because that was so great. And what I'd love is if you would email that to me so that I can put in the show notes, because that way people can go to the blog post for this episode and they can copy and paste it. And I can tell you right now that's going into our program. So I'm going to copy and paste that. Okay. And I'm going to put that as a resource in the personal faith formula lesson for our Zibly program, because I really like having examples. And I think that people have a hard time knowing what they want. You know, if you ask them, well, what do you want? They might say like, oh, I don't want to be overweight anymore. Or I don't want to have this pain anymore. And it's like, well, you're telling me what you don't want instead of what you do want.
Right.
And so that was so well worded to be very specific, intentional. It was very present tense, which is important for your brain. Mm-hmm. A couple things that I think was really cool. I 100% believe, I 100% commit, and I 100% will stay determined. And I love those parts of it.
I call those the BCDs, not the ABCs, belief, commitment, and determination.
I love that. I love that. And did you come up with all of this on your own, just through that, the daily meetings with yourself?
Yeah, when I figured out what all I needed to do, it just came real easy to me. For some reason, I didn't change it that much from the very beginning. Maybe six or seven times I had things that I thought should go here rather than there. But, you know, I had studied, examined myself so much. I knew that those were the things that I wanted to say.
Well, and I think that that is another really important topic of this conversation is self-reflection. Mm-hmm. It's a skill. And sitting in the silence and meeting with yourself and receiving, I call them downloads from God, from source. You know, I believe in God, so I call it, I say God gives you the insight and the understanding and the wisdom that you need, but you have to be still, right? Like he speaks in whisper. And so I think when we're constantly distracted by work or technology or, you know, TV, social media, we're robbing ourselves of the opportunity to receive the insights that are needed to do that, to create that. And another thing that's really important for people to recognize, this is something that Martin came up with and it is true to him. And so as you create, you know, he calls it the compassionate chief eating officer pledge. We call it the personal faith formula. You call it whatever you want, but it has to be true to you and speak to your soul and be motivating to you. So you can't just copy and paste it. You can take aspects that speak to you, but don't be afraid to make your own. So how do you use this pledge? Do you say it every single morning? Do you say it a couple of times a day? What's your rhythm like with it?
Okay. So when I first started, I would say it multiple times a day. And after you do that for a while, after about 1,000 times, you know, you know what it is, and you can say it except when you're 72 years old and forgot it for a minute. But I would do it every day. Multiple times a day. Sometimes it takes about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. I can say it in a minute and a half. And I might say it. One way I used it was before I sat down to eat a meal. When I eat too fast, one of my big problems was eat too fast. And that was my biggest problem. And I would say it then. I would say it. I'd take walks and I'd say it. But I knew I had to beat it in my head. And I actually kind of did a lobotomy on myself, and I threw my old brain, you know, I visualized throwing my old brain off a cliff with all the grooves and stuff in it, and it splashed, and I watched it go to the bottom, and then I put a new brain in, and I used this to create my new brain. You know, I decided, so that was it.
It's a living proof of auto-suggestion. So from a scientific standpoint, if you're a Zivli member, you in module 5, there's a lesson on auto-suggestion, and that is that your brain will do what you tell it to do. You just have to be responsible enough to give it the instructions that it needs. And a lot of the thoughts that drive our behavior are on a subconscious level. And so you had even said a lot of the 17 problems that you identified you had before age 10. And the very first thing that I wrote down at the top here was very poor on my notes. And I was like, I wonder if his father being very poor affected his eating behavior, or, you know, if you want to dive into what were those problems that formed before age 10 that probably ruled your subconscious mind and behavior for your entire adult life.
Yeah. The reason was the depression. They were poor and I had to clean my plate. That's one of them. Right. But I could get into the 17 bad habits I had, if you'd like, and maybe do an example of one of them. Is that where you want me to go?
I think so. Yep. And then we're going to circle back around to the 10, you know, the thin commandments
Have to. Hey, I wanted to share some concepts that have been very important to me. They're called the thin commandments. To get to the thin commandments, I had about 25 or 30 major concepts of weight loss for myself. And most of those aren't in my thin commandments. So I had to work hard trying to pare them down to what I thought the most important ones are. And I actually did my best to try to put them in priority order as far as somebody who maybe was a yo-yo dieter to help them. It would be different for everybody, I think, but this was my attempt to do it for myself. So I think I'll go through commandment one was to make an irrevocable commitment to permanent weight loss. To me, that by far is the most important commandment. Because if you don't commit yourself to do it, like I didn't commit myself my entire life. I lost 5 pounds 20 times, you know, and gained it back. And that may be each year. But the commitment's important. To say the word try just doesn't mix with permanent weight loss. And I'm trying to get people to lose weight permanently. Try is a kind of a weak word if you're serious about permanent weight loss. I would rather people say that I commit and then decommit. If you don't want to do it anymore, that's fine. But the word try just isn't quite strong enough, because if you're going to try to lose weight permanently, that is a major job and it takes a lot of concentration and focus. Well, anyway, that's my irrevocable commitment to permanent weight loss. Number two is I assume the responsibility of the compassionate chief eating officer. And we've kind of covered that a good bit, but that is my second most important one. You have to be in charge. You have to be responsible. You have to be accountable. You have to make the decisions. Nobody can do that for you. So it's your plan and your life, and you just need to be in charge and do what you have to do. The third commandment is to eat any food on planet Earth, that there are no forbidden foods. Now, I thought that was important because I was looking for a sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I knew if I said, you know, I'm never going to eat chocolate cake again, that'd be the first thing I'd want. So I think it was really important. I put it as the third commandment because there aren't good foods and bad foods. If you see in one book where good foods are good and foods are bad, in the next book, it'll be the other way around. So we just have to eat the foods we like that like us back, and mainly whole foods. But it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be only that way. So I think it's important that people realize it for sustainability, you know, that we're going to do it anyway. So eat what you want. But if you're reasonable most of the time and you have that irrevocable commitment, you're going to straighten yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
The commandment four is to exercise for health, fitness, and enjoyment, no longer for weight loss. I exercised like a maniac my entire life. I played sports all my life. I worked out every day as an adult. I played basketball twice a day when I just started being the CEO. I do it at lunch and I do it at night. I played tennis. I walked and jogged 5-6 miles a day, and I never took a day off unless I was sick. And I did that my entire life. But some kind of way, I managed to gain 40 pounds over 40 years. So, which isn't that much a year. It's like a stick of gum a day is, you know, it's a pound a year. So something happened to me that kind of changed my life on that. When I was trying to lose weight, somewhere during the plan, I can't remember which year, but I hurt my back so bad that I had some like nerve thing that was going on. And I was in bed for 2 or 3 weeks, and I was just in bed. I didn't exercise or anything. And I don't know if I ate more or less, to tell you the truth. I was just in pain. When I got through with that 2 or 3 weeks, I got up and got on the scale. And this is the honest to God truth. I lost 11 pounds.
I bet.
And I didn't exercise for it must have been about 3 weeks. And so I said, well, this is crazy. It's not going to stay off. So I went, when I started back exercising and eating over the next 2 or 3 weeks, I only gained back 2 pounds. So by not exercising, I had the biggest weight loss in my whole weight loss journey, which was 9 pounds in 3 weeks. When you take 10 years to gain to lose 40 pounds, if you have a year where you lose 2 pounds, you're doing pretty good. Uh-huh. I lost nine pounds in 3 weeks. So I took that to mean that exercise is really important for your health and fitness and enjoyment. But my personal opinion is you shouldn't consider it anything as far as weight loss. You should just do it because you like it, enjoy it. You have fun with it. If you like to walk, or if you want to walk around the house and do things or go up the block, that's fine. But just don't do it for weight loss. That was a big aha for me.
Yeah. And I just want to point out that Dr. Jason Fung, in his book, The Obesity Code, says about exercise. Exercise is good for you and should be done every day. Exercise is like brushing your teeth. It's good for you and should be done every day. Just don't expect to lose weight. And I think a bigger part of the conversation is we're not just out to lose weight. We're out to lose weight and keep it off. And that's really where the benefit of exercise comes in, is in that weight loss maintenance to preserve your lean muscle mass and to boost your metabolism and all that stuff. So keep going. But I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. So the next commandment is commandment five, which is this: keep score so you can become an expert on yourself. Mm-hmm. This was put it as number five, but it was really the first thing I started working on. I'd been weighing on every day all my life, but I started doing my Fitness Pal, and I remember I was trying to eat less and exercise more. So I developed a formula called the nutrition score. And so I put in my food, and then I figured a score that was calories plus carbs plus fat plus sweet calories. I did those four areas: calories plus carbs plus fat plus sweet calories. And when you do that and you add up that score, then you are using some of the, like the sweet calories is carbs plus fat plus calories. You're putting that in your score again, just in addition to your calories. So what I learned, long story short, is I did that every day and I weighed every day, and I knew exactly how much I should be eating every day by that. I didn't weigh things or anything. I just looked at a chicken breast and said 200, 300, or 400 calories, whatever it looks like. So I didn't spend but a few minutes a day at it. But I figured out that I could eat 1,700 calories, 170 combined carbs and fatty, you know, carbs plus fat, whatever it is, and 130 in sweet calories. When I mean sweets, I mean desserts, not just when sugars are in a food. And if it equaled 2,000, then I was going to maintain my weight. And the way I knew that is because I did a 7-day running average of my food that I did and the nutrition score, and also did a 7-day average of my weight, and I'd line them up against each other. And so over time, even though we gain 10 to 14 pounds, we eat 10 or 14 pounds of food a day, you know, 10 pounds of water and liquids and 4 pounds of food, of course your weight's going to go up and down on the scale. But if you even that out over time and compare them against each other, I became an expert on myself. I knew exactly what was going to happen over time based on how I ate. So I ate whatever I wanted, but I knew if I ate a piece of chocolate cake, I'd have to like had to do something else, and I wanted my nutrition, so I didn't want to do that as much. But anyway, so that was, so however you keep score, whether it's weighing, whether it's your, the clothes you wear, if they're tight or loose, there's some kind of measure that you need to know so you'll know how you're doing. But it'd be good to measure it against your behavior. If you're journaling every day, which is something I do also, then you can see what you did yesterday to see what happened today. So that was that. I commit to a 3-pound line in the sand weight.
So yeah, line in the sand weight. What does that mean?
Okay. So whatever my lowest weight is, then I can be within 3 pounds of that weight, but not go over. So I keep a really tight line in the sand weight. Sort of like the stock market. You know, it's the opposite of the stock market. You protect your losses and limit your gains rather than protect your gains and limit your losses. So if I go from 197 to 194 or 197 to 196, at 197, my line sand weight was 200. At 196, it's 199. So it just kind of moves down as you lose weight. So, or otherwise, you're going to be on diets all your life. And I didn't want to ever do a diet ever again. I just was creating a lifestyle. Now, if you get close to 3 pounds overweight, over your lowest weight, then you can be 2.5 pounds, and then you eat something the next day and you get to be 4 or 5. But anyway, you just, you know, be patient and work your way back down. You don't have to be, there's no deadline that we have, but you just kind of tweak a few things and you know to do it. So that's really helped me. I really hadn't been more than 5 pounds overweight in 16 years.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. After decades of being overweight, I think that's very impressive. And I think it really proves that you can lose weight no matter your age and you can keep it off no matter your age.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So the next commandment, 7, is to be kind to yourself and everyone else. Put it as 7. These are all could be the most important ones, but the internal dialogue that we have with ourselves until we work on it and realize it is really bad for people. You know, people are really hard on themselves and they use shame and guilt and this, that, and the other. I learned a technique called the 3-second guided missile rule. And I've done a lot of work to keep my mind positive. But this technique that I used, and I used it and it seemed kind of woo-woo, but it works for me. And what it is, I go, if I have any negative thought in my mind whatsoever, if I'm worrying about something, if I'm mad about something, if I'm upset about something, if I get that thought in my head, I go 3, 2, 1, blast off. And then I watch the thing blow up with that missile and it floats down to the ground. And I say kaboom, you know, when you hit it. And then what I do is I switch my brain to something I'm grateful for or something I'm looking forward to or some productive task that I need to start doing. Mm-hmm. And it took me a few years, but I'm pretty good at it. I don't sit and worry about it. I used to be the biggest worry wart you ever saw about my business and worried this is going to happen, that can happen. And, you know, I just gotten really good at controlling that. And in our internal dialogue, that voice in our head that talks to us every day, we can control that. If you're the chief eating officer or compassionate chief feeding officer, the word compassionate comes in there. We can control what we say to ourselves. And sometimes we talk very badly to ourselves, and it really doesn't help anything. It surely doesn't help weight loss. And also being kind to everyone else is extremely important. So you'll feel good about yourself and make friends and be happy and doing the whole social interaction thing. So it's just not being kind to yourself. We're probably kinder to everyone else than we are to ourselves a lot of times. But I think that being kind is very important and something to keep your thoughts on. Embrace your imperfection. We're not going to lose weight linearly. It's going to go up and down, like in that 3-pound line in the sand. Mine are little jagged things, but they're trending downward and stuff. So be gentle with yourself. We're going to screw up a lot. You know, great baseball players had a 350 batting average. That mean they six to seven times they struck out or got out. So we're all going to have a lot of failures. People that are scientists and invented things that might have taken them 1,000 tries to come up with the one thing that changed the world. So we can't be hard on ourselves. We have to realize that we're going to have a lot of imperfection, a lot of ups and downs, but every day is a new day. And if you're committed, you won't dwell on that. You'll just, you know, start doing better the next day. Utilize your God-given superpower, fasting. I could talk about this for a month. So I'm not sure exactly what to say about it, but it really changed my life. It was amazing. And I found out about it 3 years ago after I'd already lost all my weight. I'd lost 40 pounds. Then I did the fasting, and I didn't mean to lose weight, but I lost another 10 pounds. And I've been able to maintain it for 3 years. That's helped me maintain it. And I don't do all that other stuff anymore that I was telling you that you need to do as far as keeping up with your food and this, that, and the other. It really helped me do that. And another great thing about fasting is that those eight or nine things, reasons I ate because of comfort, entitlement, reward, celebration, out of boredom. If I do a 22-2 protocol, I mean, sometimes I eat lunch. I'm really looser than that, but that's about what I average on most days. Okay. But I got rid of eating for comfort, entitlement, reward, celebration, out of boredom, because of being excited, because you eat at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So that totally solved 9 of my 17 problems, just doing that.
Okay. Yeah, that gets into the problems. I like to say intermittent fasting is the best way to recalibrate your relationship with food.
Oh, yeah. And
when you're committed to not eating, even if it's for 16 hours of the day, you'll be very surprised how mindless eating really creeps into our lifestyle. So yeah, keep going. But that's, you're writing a whole book on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm writing on that. And, but my health has improved tremendously. Not that I had bad health, but my blood pressure, you know, got better. I have something called AFib where I have an irregular heartbeat here and there. I've had for many years, got off all my medication on the blood pressure, and just all these mental things are so much better. So I really encourage people to make, you know, be as gentle as you want to be to start. There's no rush on that either. But to, you know, start an intermittent fasting lifestyle or add that into your lifestyle some kind of way. Then I have for the last one, to eat joyfully with wisdom and grace. One thing I figured out is we're either eating or we're not eating every second of every day our entire life. So eating is joyful, but fasting is also joyful. But I had the eating behaviors that I worked on, and I worked really hard on my eating behavior, which is eat when you're hungry, select more whole healthy foods, sit and eat slowly, savoring every bite, stop at satiety 66, and then stop and divert. But satiety 66, I want to explain that a little bit to you. What that is, I saw a speed limit sign one time that said go 24 miles per hour in this resort that I was walking in. I'm saying 24 miles per hour, that's a weird amount of time for a weird amount of speed for a speed limit sign. So I said, I'm going to really do that with my hunger. I figured out a 1 to 100 hunger fullness scale. One would mean that you're so hungry you would eat your left arm off, that you were that hungry. And 100 would mean that you ate so much your stomach was pumped. You know, that's how. Mm-hmm. So that's the 1 to 100. And I try to eat till satiety 66. I could have said 70. I could have said 65, 60. But I liked using that 66. And then however I did it, I kind of learned what satiety 66 was. And I realized when I went over it, if I didn't eat enough, I'd try to get up to satiety 66. Mm-hmm. And then 30 would be, I'd try to be between 30 and 66, 30 for the hunger part. But when when I do intermittent fasting, I'm at 50 pretty much all day while I'm fasting. And then I start eating when I finally eat. And I really wasn't that hungry, but when I start eating, I'm really hungry, you know, but my mm-hmm. satiety signals are just so in line. And I never thought that could be because I was always eating fast and scared of future hunger and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. So anyway, those are my 10 thin commandments. And I hope that's helpful to somebody.
It is. I have a couple of notes that you emailed me that I wanted to ask about. The sweet taste for finality. What does that mean to you?
Okay. Well, I was telling you that I had 130 calories of sweets that I could eat a day, you know, in that nutrition score. So I only ate sweets at night after dinner when I was growing up. I lived with my grandmother in the same room, actually, and she baked everything. And I learned how to eat desserts after dinner every night. That's one of the things by the time I was 10 years old. So I decided to be sustainable. You know, people have to eat sweets, you know, I left 130 calories, and it's amazing what you can eat in sweets for 130 calories. You can have 5-calorie Jell-O cups. You can have Snickers. You can have popsicles at 18 calories. I could eat a ton of stuff mm-hmm. if I wanted to get up to 130 calories. This thing, or Wintergreen mint. I carried these in my pocket. It's 5 calories. It's a sugar-free Wintergreen mint. And if I was going out to a birthday party or something, I might have this rather than the cake or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I have something called a trillion tiny tricks that I've figured out because I've been accumulating diet stuff my entire life. So that's what the sweet deal was.
And then the stop and divert. You mentioned that really briefly, but I thought there was mm-hmm. probably some really good stuff in there if you want to explain mm-hmm. that strategy.
Sure. Stop and divert. As soon as I get to satiety 66, I stop and I have diversion techniques where, you know, when food's so good, you want to keep eating it or whatever. So one of my diversion techniques was this. Right after my last bite of the meal, I'd stick one of these in my mouth. And then I'd go, I did different things, just things that were pleasurable or fun. There's a game I play called Merge Bubbles on my telephone. So I would switch my attention to that. I would go take a walk. I'd go I have a list of about 100 things that I do, but I kind of condition myself, and I'm not perfect at any of this stuff by any stretch of the imagination, but I found ways to have a good batting average, just like I talked about in Embrace Your Imperfection. They're just little techniques to use like that. So that was the sweet deal. I had 130 calories of whatever I wanted, and I pretty much did that the entire time.
Yep. So I think that goes into the fact that we don't want to be fully restrictive because you always want what you can't have. So I think when we use more allowing language and allowing protocols, I personally agree with you that I think it's sustainable. Now, what people choose to allow may differ based on their preferences and their background and their psychology, but I completely agree. So before we wrap it up with the problems, I'm going to talk with you about protein a little bit because I'm sure my listeners have some questions about your protein. Mm-hmm. But then I also wanted to just highlight the fact that you're using visualization in a really cool way with those negative thoughts, the 3-2-1 blast off. And then mm-hmm. what do you say when you visualize mission complete or mission accomplished?
I'm just thinking about the next thing I diverted myself to. Good. I really don't say, I said kaboom after it.
Kaboom.
That's when it blows up. Yep. But as it's floating to the ground, that negative thought, I'm just onto my next thing already.
But that's a really helpful visualization tool, and that can be very powerful. But then gratitude, like that's something that we really advocate for is gratitude. It really shifts your energy away from the negativity. Uh-huh. So I'm curious, from a longevity standpoint, from a muscle health standpoint, do you know how much protein you're eating a day? Because you mentioned sugar, carbs, calories. And I was curious if along this journey you've ever dug into that realm.
No, that's a great question because I didn't mention protein when I was doing the carbs and fat. Yeah. So I didn't know to be interested in it, honestly, because I always just ate a lot of meat. And I never thought about measuring that while I was doing the weight loss because I knew that a lot of my calories were going to be in meat, chicken, fish, you know, that kind of thing. So honestly, I just didn't ever give it a second thought.
So, and that was kind of one of my, when you were, I was pondering over your equation that you gave and like, well, maybe he's not counting the protein because it's kind of a given in his lifestyle already. And he knows that that's a needed nutrient for his body to preserve muscle mass, you know? And okay. I just wanted to check on that because I wanted to say
one other thing. I don't know. You're not old enough to live through the low carb and the low fat years.
Low fat for sure. So when I was growing up, it was the low carb. And then I don't remember if the Atkins thing was after that or before that, but for
I don't know the timing, but I went during both that. So I was either being on a low fat diet on the low fat years and a low carb diet on the low carb diet years. Yeah. And what I learned from that when I was trying to lose weight on that is you can either have carbs or fat, but if you start getting into carbs plus fat, it doesn't work out so well. And sometimes you can switch from low carb to low fat. This is what I learned about myself. And then that kind of shakes things up when you're on a plateau. It just changed your macros up a little bit. But anyway, that's all there was.
Oh, sorry for interrupting. I think the key there is keep protein stable. So depending on your preferences and your health conditions, you have some wiggle room with the carbs and the fat, but protein, I think, is the cornerstone there just for your muscle health and maintenance. But thank you for sharing those. First of all, I thought that those were really brilliant. We'll put those in the show notes. Okay. And I wanted you to just really quickly talk about your 17 problems. So in our program, one of our modules is called Growth List. And this is where people identify the thoughts holding them back. And then we teach them a process to fix those thoughts from limiting thoughts to productive thoughts. And so this is very similar to people identifying, developing their growth list, their opportunities for growth. So what were yours throughout this entire process and what are they today? I'm kind of curious if new problems have arisen.
Okay, that's another great question. I know you're very familiar with James Clear. I hear you talking about that. And I love him too. And I've read other, you know, there's a guy named Fogg and Duhigg, and there's a lot of Tiny Habits books that you can.
Heard that one.
And I'm all over that. And that's how I pretty much fixed every one of my problems. By doing that. An example would be that I was a very fast eater. In fact, it was ridiculously fast. And when I got hungry, I thought I was maybe going to starve to death. So I just wharf my food down. And so I did a lot of tiny habits to fix that. The first thing I did was to time it. You know, I sat and I figured out that I can't remember the exact number, but it was some ridiculously low figure. I was eating 3 meals a day in 15, 18 minutes. I don't know, it was something really stupid. And my first tiny step was to time my meals. You look at your watch at the beginning, you look at your watch at the end, and you put the number down. And then I said, well, if I'm doing it in 18 minutes just to pick a number, let's see if I can get to 25 minutes, and then to 40 minutes, and then to 60 minutes. I got to 90 minutes. I'm the last one to finish a meal now rather than the first one in most cases because I eat very slowly. I taught myself to do it, and it's actually possible because we're not going to starve to death. Hunger isn't an emergency and it isn't cumulative. So that was kind of cool. And to get them to the longer distances that I was taking to eat my food, I would put in a series of 1 minute pauses. I had a pause at the very first and I'd see what my hunger level was. I kind of check in with that. Am I really hungry? I might even say the compassionate chief eating officer pledge then. But so I worked in these different pauses in there. That helped. And that was hard. It's hard to sit.
I'm just trying to count to three right now before I eat anything. And it, like 80% of the time I'm forgetting until after I'm done. And I'm like, oh yeah, 1, 2, 3. And so I put it on my personal faith formula to remind myself that it is hard. Even if you want to change a simple habit, like sit down and wait 1 minute before you eat. That can be very challenging.
Very challenging.
it's, we're so, I'm with you. And especially as a mom, when your kids need stuff all the time, you're like, I got to eat when I get the chance, you know, type of thing. Before my kids need something else. So that's a habit I'm actively working on too, is slowing down for meals, because what I realized was I was overeating because, that was the only time I was resting during the day. Like I was go, 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 go. And the only time that I was eating or sitting down and pausing was when I was eating. So I was using that as a break. And I said, oh, well, that's a quick fix. I just need to work in a couple more rest periods throughout my day so that at the end of the day, I don't feel like I need a 2-hour decompression and a night snack to unwind again. So if we can really unlink emotionally unwinding with always eating, I think that that's a really good habit for people to develop, is how do I unwind without eating?
Yeah. And that's hard to do. That's a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you were able to do that. So
I'm working on it. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention about, I just was thinking something, and then I'll come back. I want to go through the bad habits I had with you.
Sure.
But when you're fasting or whatever, I eat whatever I want. I don't, you know, I don't have 130 calories in this. I'll eat chocolate cake. I'll eat whatever. I'll only want nutritious food because you need nutrition so badly. But I eat everything as an intermittent faster. I don't count anything and I don't do anything. My satiety signals are good. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah.
Here are my 17 bad habits. If you want me to read them out to you.
Yep.
Okay. So I ate too fast. These are in order too.
Okay.
I ate too fast. That was by far my biggest habit. I ate standing up. I overate and got too full. I ate desserts after dinner. And then all these things I ate for comfort, entitlement, reward, celebration, boredom, because of cravings, excitement, out of boredom. That was in my pledge. And those are the things that fasting really helped me kind of clean up for good. I wanted to please everyone that fed me. I overate when celebrating holidays and special occasions. I ate too much junk food. I always clean my plate. And I finished the leftovers when you know, I told you my mother's from the Depression or whatever. Not only do we have to clean the plate, I was the go-to person that if there was a platter with some food left, she didn't want to throw it in the disposal. So I had to eat that too.
You were the garbage disposal.
I was the garbage disposal.
There's always one.
Yeah, and I was one. It wasn't going to be my brother because he used to have vegetable soup and he'd pick out his lima beans out of it. He hated lima beans. I even had to finish up his lima beans, my mother said. So to say,
That conditioning as a child really impacted your eating. I wanted to point out something. I tell our members this all the time. You have to identify your problems, but then put them in your personal faith formula. That's exactly what you did. You identified so many of your problems, and then you put that into your compassionate chief eating officer pledge so that your brain was constantly getting those instructions to overcome your most frequent problems. Mm-hmm. So it's not just enough to identify the problem. You have to combat it with a thought to fix the problem on a regular basis.
Right. And it took me years, but a lot of effort, but you know, it's possible, but it does take a lot of work, you know, to do this stuff.
It does.
I'll tell you one other thing. Let me just, I want to tell you the one I use I used to eat standing up. So I had something.
I would love to hear that.
It's very simple. The other ones I had to do a lot of stuff. This was sit or spit. So if you get food in your mouth, I had to spit it out. That was my rule. I could do it about 25% of the time, but it wasn't 100% of the time. So, and that took a lot of work to do, but that's a simple thing to do. If you find food in your mouth, spit it out. And one other thing along with that, these are my trillion tiny tricks, that if you're a plate cleaner like me, which I am, and you can't get over that, cut off the first piece of food before you eat it and throw it in the trash can.
Genius.
I didn't figure that out. I saw that in a book 40 years ago or something. I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay. So in your book, are you putting these trillion tiny tricks? Because these are very creative and simple.
I just have to ask the publisher how many pages he wants to do for it. I literally have hundreds of pages of stuff. I threw most of it away.
Those are so helpful though. And I would love to use that book as a resource because these little tiny tricks are really what makes the difference. I've been thinking about lifestyle changes and stuff, and I kind of feel like the most successful things you do are the ones that almost feel like you're not changing anything.
Right.
And that's why, like, okay, well, if you don't want to finish all the food on your plate, throw away the first bite.
Mm-hmm.
That almost feels like you're not changing anything, but you are. And so, or that, you know, the sit or spit trick. It's mm-hmm. almost like you're not changing anything. You can, if the food goes in your mouth, okay, but then you're just going to spit it out. It's just the tiniest little step. So will you reach out when your book is published so that I don't know if maybe you want to come back on the show and we can talk about maybe in detail some of these trillion tiny tricks that you have.
I absolutely would love to do that. And it'd be fun because I can tell we're just on the same wavelength about everything.
So I love it. I learn a lot from your book because as a coach, I want to put as many tools in my toolbox as possible. So when people are having these challenges or the problems that you faced, I want to go through your list and say, have you tried this and this and this and this and this? What a helpful resource that's going to be.
Yeah. The other thing it does is it makes people realize when I throw this stuff at them, if I'm trying to help somebody, said, There's not an excuse you can make for anything because there's an answer to everything if you really want to try to think about it, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. They're just out there, all these ideas, if you pay attention to them.
I'm super excited for that, and then we'll put that as a resource probably in our Mastering Your Habits masterclass.
Mm-hmm.
That one is based off of James Clear's book Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. But my guess is that I can go through your trillion tiny habits and almost create, if you haven't already created, like a spreadsheet of like, okay, this is the habit I'm working on. What are the what are all of the little tricks that I can try as an action mm-hmm. item to break this habit? So that's going to be a really awesome resource.
I hadn't done that yet, but that's a good idea. I just fixed ones for me. It'd be fun to think through what are some other ones. And if a few people get together, we could come up with some stuff, I would think.
That'd be awesome. Well, mm-hmm. when you're at that part, reach out because I might have some ideas on kind of the most common bad habits.
I'd love to.
Thank you. And so we'll link up your Facebook group. Is there any other resource or, website or anything that you wanted me to share with the audience today?
I have a Twitter account if anybody is interested. It's @Martin_share. Okay. And between that and the Facebook group or anybody that needs some help in any kind of way, because I don't charge anything, if they want to just pick my brain about something, anybody can get in touch with me and give them my email address or my cell phone number I could give to you. I don't care. Anybody can call me that wants to.
That's awesome. And thank you for doing this. I wanted to highlight one more thing is just your passion. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about longevity research, it's really clear that if you have something to live for, you're going to live a longer, healthier, mm-hmm. happier life. And so I just wanted to acknowledge you and, you could have retired and you could have been like, put my feet up, done with it. And it's like, no, like you made that commitment that I will lose this weight and then I will help other people do the same. And I wanted to thank you for that heart that you have for other people.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that because I really do love this stuff.
I know, I can tell. All right. We will talk soon. I'm excited to have you back on the show to talk more about the book.
Absolutely. Great to meet you. And I enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Martin.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Reshape Your Health podcast today. To learn more about Zivli, our online course and coaching program to reverse insulin resistance for long-term weight loss and disease prevention, check out our website at www.zivli.com. That's ZIVLI.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a rating and review on your listening platform and share it with a friend. I'll talk with you at the same time, same place next week. Bye for now.